This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Thank you so much, Parker. I'm Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. It's a pleasure to welcome two Lansing area gentlemen who have made a name for themselves through the years, both locally and I dare say even regionally as well. If you're a fan of our local jazz scene, you've often catch this duo playing on Tuesday evenings at Moriarty's Pub in downtown Lansing. I've also caught one of them playing in East Lansing, teamed up with Jim Alfredson, a phenomenal young guitarist by the name of Chris Minami, and you might even catch Freddie Cunningham of Root Doctor fame popping in for a song or two. Now, I can't tell you how much I've wanted to bring the elder of these two back because we met during a taping of our inaugural recording of the Time Signatures Liars Club. That's what I call it, over in Lansing. And he had some really fun stories to tell. But Jeff Shelp, on the other hand, one of Lansing's truly legendary drummers, Randy Gillespie, we're glad to have you here, better known as Uncle G. Both of you, welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
Better than all right.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having us.
We are so glad to have you here, and we're going to have a good time. I've gotten some questions. I've talked to some people, and so I just want to have a good time and dig in here. So here's the deal. Rule number one is we're just going to have a good time and chat, okay? But I want you both to feel free that if one of you are talking and the other one has something to throw in, by all means, drop it in there, okay? You're more than welcome to do that. And don't worry about talking too long. We can record as long as we need to and edit it, whatever we need to do. So
all right.
What I'd like to do is start off with my favorite icebreaker. Talk about your earliest memories of music. And Jeff, I'm going to go ahead and start with you.
Oh, boy. I think some of my earliest memories probably involve turning over the Tinker Toy tubs. You remember those little cardboard tub?
Oh yeah.
Had a metal bottom, and I'd flip those over, and I'd take the longest sticks out of the Tinker Toy things. They had those little orange plastic connectors I'd screw on the bottom, and I would turn those upside down and beat on them like they were drums. So, so that's one of my first things. And I also remember having a penchant for lip syncing to Neil Diamond and Barry Manilow on my parents' coffee table.
Okay.
So I don't know. I guess I was destined for performance.
Destined for something, right?
Yeah.
Right. How about you, Uncle G?
As far as playing, I think I may have gotten my first snare drum when I was about maybe 9, maybe. And then I got my first set of drums. I remember that when I was 11.
Oh, wow.
My uncle, one of my father's brothers, who lived in Chicago at the time, I lived in Akron, Ohio.
Okay.
He sent the money for me to get a drum set, and when I was 11. But before that, I remember at 4 years old, going uptown by myself to look at the drums in the music store window.
At 4 years old?
At 4 years old. And I was on my way back home when they found me coming down Howard Street Hill. The police, and God knows who else were all riding around looking for me.
Oh, man.
And I just went up there by myself to look at the drums in the music store window on Howard Street, and was on my way back home when they found me, you know.
Man.
And I didn't think I did anything wrong.
You didn't know any better back then, right?
No, you know. And it's a funny thing. Usually, it was some people sitting on the porch. It was about 5 houses before I got to the end of Hickory Street right there. And it made a little jog to the right. Then you go about maybe 50 feet to North Street. And then you go down North Street to Howard Street, then up the hill to Cross Market. That's where the music store was. But on that side, the other side of the street, was no houses right there, just like a little woods. But there was some people sitting on the porch. Normally, back then, they see me walking up there, they would have said, "Hey, boy, where you going?" If there wasn't no grown folks with me, they would ask me where I was going, but nobody said nothing. And I kind of kept looking back, expecting somebody to say something. They didn't say nothing. And I just came on walking and went up there and looked at the drums.
Wow.
And at 4 years old, boy, when I think about that, man, I just said my parents and people were just terrified when they couldn't find me. You know, and so, but I guess I was destined to play music, you know. Anyway, since I can remember being in the world, I wanted to play drums.
While we're talking about that, when did you really get serious about playing music? And did you always see yourself being involved in music?
No, I never really saw myself in being involved. I just know I wanted to play the drums.
Okay.
You know, and then, you know, as I got a little older, people playing the drums. And then, like, I started playing in the Sanctified Church, but a little bit before that, my grandfather and another man named Ella Martin had a skin business. Now, skin is like those meat pig skins that they, you know, they're in the bag, a little bag, and they're made out of pig skin, and they cook them, and fry them in grease.
Oh, yeah.
And they fold them in little bags. Well, they had a skin business. And they used to take them around to all the clubs in Akron. You know, every Saturday night, my grandfather would go in these clubs and take out a couple of the old ones from last week and put in new ones, you know, every Saturday night.
Now, is that like pork rinds? Is that what you're talking about?
That's exactly.
Okay, all right.
Exactly. And I would get to go with him on Saturday nights, so I could stand around and watch the band. Oh man, watch the band while they playing, and I get a chance to watch the band while he taking care of the business.
Yeah,
I go in every club with him, boy. I couldn't wait every Saturday. I seen them guys playing, and I'd be looking at the drummer. And a lot of times, they had a cigarette hanging out their mouth playing. I'd watch them. I couldn't wait every Saturday night. I was going with my grandfather in them clubs. Well, I've been there long enough to watch them. Then I go to the next club, same thing. You get some different cats, you know. So
yeah.
I've been wondering. And then I started, as I got a little older, I started playing in the Sanctified Church, where the music concept at the time, I didn't know it was different, but they had a... As I got older and stuff, I didn't realize they had a jazz concept in this particular church, the House of Jacob in Akron, Ohio. And it was like, you know, I didn't know it was different until I got older and saw some of the church music in the other churches, you know, and I realized, oh, yeah, okay, you know. And then, but it was more like, the radio, because I used to listen to the radio on Fridays and Saturday nights. I get up in the middle of the night, turn the radio on, and put my head down on the table and listen to music till 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning. Because Friday and Saturday nights on the radio, they play different music back then, you know. And so every week I'd be listening, no matter whose house. I could be at my mother and father with them, or I could be at my grandfather's place overnight, or one of the aunts or something. I got a chance to listen to the radio and listen. I just did that for years and years and years, every Friday and Saturday night. You know, then as I got older, a little older and older, and I started playing out, you know, with older cats, always older. I was always the youngest cats by far back in the day in Akron, Ohio. And it was against the law for me to be in the club. I was supposed to be 21. And a couple of times, the police helped me take my drums in. Yeah, because we had three black detectives on the police force at that time, Mr. Sellers, Mr. Parnell, and Mr. Craig. And so one time, Mr. Sellers pulled up in front of us. We pulled up, and getting the drums out. And he said, oh, give me one of them drums. Let me help you take them in. You know, and I'm underage. You know, yeah. You know, I mean, but club owners.
It was never, a different time back then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God, no. And the club owners never said nothing. But they also knew. They also knew the older guys was going to take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
You're
was
keep you in line.
That's right. There wasn't no funny business going to be
right,
going on.
Right, right.
And then when we get through playing, they take me right to my door.
I'll be darned.
Wow. Yeah, that was just, and I considered myself blessed that I could do that without any issue.
Mm-hmm.
And until this day, I never smoked a drink. And still this day, I still don't smoke a drink.
There you go.
But I wanted to at one time because when I was, the people in the church I went to smoked pipes, and this mixture number 79 smelled so good. Oh my God. It's like somebody put air freshener in it. So I told my grandfather, I want to smoke the pipe when I get big. So he said, well, son, you can smoke, but smoking take your wind. Take your wind. That stopped the warrant then. I said, take your wind. I didn't want to smoke, you know. But I like to still smell that mixture number 79.
I don't remember what the mix was my grandfather smoked, but he smoked a pipe back when I was a kid. And it, same thing.
Same thing.
It was a cherry blend and some other Borkum riff or whatever.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
But yeah.
Jeff, how about you, man? Did you always see yourself becoming a musician? At what point did you really get serious?
It's kind of all, when I think back, I mean, it's kind of all I ever really wanted to do was play music. And it took me a while into my adulthood to get to the point where I actually saw that as being a possibility for me.
So you're kind of a late bloomer.
I mean, in some ways, I've started studying music. I think when I was 6, I started taking piano lessons.
Okay.
Cause I showed an aptitude for it when I was pretty young, and my parents were always supportive in getting us gear and lessons, but I started taking piano lessons at 6, and that actually I was always interested in drums, and having a piano background gives you kind of a leg up when you get into school band to get into percussion, because you already have some experience with the tonal system.
Yep.
So we didn't know that going into it, so it was kind of lucky for me that I actually had those years of piano. So I started doing percussion in 5th grade band, and then I think it was around the summer of before my 7th grade year, I think I got my first drum set, and you know, and at that point I was listening to like Iron Maiden and, you know, Metallica and Motley Crue and stuff like that. So like the first song I ever actually learned to play from an album was an Iron Maiden tune.
Okay.
But on the same token, I always had like the sound of jazz was always in my ear. There was this show that we used to do a ton of driving back in the day, and I remember, you know, driving across the state or across the country with my parents and my grandparents, and there was this show, Big Band Saturday Night, and it was just like a syndicated thing where you could find it, and each, you know, you'd drive until the thing starts to fade, and then you find the next one, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, you could listen to this for hours going across country. And I always really liked that sound. And then, strangely enough, the soundtrack for, what's that movie? Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze at the summer camp.
Oh,
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing, yeah.
Yeah, that has some like really killing, like, you know, Latin, you know, mambos and stuff. And I always really like those things. And so, I always had like a Duke Ellington and Glenn Miller and, you know, eventually some like Wynton Marsalis stuff in my record collection. So I was listening to those things. But, you know, as far as becoming a musician, I remember one of my high school girlfriends telling me one time, I just want to be a musician. And she goes, no, when you're, you know, I think we were talking about the year 2000. I graduated high school in 92.
Okay.
We were talking about the year 2000, and I'm going to be 26 in the year 2000. And what are you going to be doing then? Well, I hope I'm playing music. And she's like, nah, you're going to be wearing a suit and working a desk job. And like, you know, so I was, and I'm not saying it's her fault, but you know, that's kind of where it seemed impractical to,
right,
you know, to do it. And it's a hard, it's a hard hurdle to get over, but it wasn't until my and I was actually in my 30s that you know, there's this interview I was reading once with the great jazz drummer Adam Nussbaum, and he said, "I tried everything not to be a musician," and I read that at some point after I had, you know, more or less become a professional musician. I was like, I totally get that, you know.
One of my favorite quotes was, it was a little different, was a guy that was a blues musician. He says, "I'm a musician and I'm a blues musician, so I'm broke twice."
So, yeah, yeah.
But listen, first of all, you haven't even noticed I'm wearing your shirt, buddy.
I noticed.
I'm wearing my Uncle G shirt just for this episode.
I noticed.
But I had a little nugget dropped in my ear yesterday. I was talking to Jeff on the phone. We were kind of just going over the interview. And I don't like to talk about interview stuff early because I want the stories to be fresh. Hmm. And I stopped him right in the middle of this story. So, Jeff, since you dropped this in my ear, I would love to hear the story about how you met Randy. Because this wasn't just two guys meeting on a street corner or in a gig somewhere. You got a pretty cool story, man. And if you need to throw something in the middle, Randy, you jump in there, okay?
Okay, I'm trying to think.
Well, he'll start telling you, and I'm sure it'll kick a memory.
This goes back. So the first time I actually think I ever met Randy, I was working at a music store, Marshall Music, in the mid-90s. And one of my good friends, Matt Gugamus, is an amazing drummer. He lives out in the San Francisco area now. But Matt was like my age, but okay. He was also kind of one of my first real teachers because he, like, my hands were decent, but he was the guy that helped me really start to get my hand technique together. And he was always talking about Randy, and all my other drummer friends were always talking about Randy. And this was before MSU Jazz Studies program got really formalized. Like, they had some jazz classes, but there wasn't a curriculum yet, so it was kind of limited. Randy was teaching there, and Matt was studying with him. And I think the first time I actually ever met Randy is when you came into the store at Marshall's, and I had just gotten bit really hard by the jazz bug at this point in my life, like maybe a year or two into it, when I had a fatal 1-2 punch of Miles Davis album Nefertiti. Somebody played for me. And then shortly thereafter, somebody gave me a copy of the album Impressions by John Coltrane. If you know your jazz history, those two albums are kind of like fairly far along in that they're building on everything that came after it. So it's kind of a weird entry point because you're missing out on the Duke Ellington and the Count Basie and the Charlie Parker and all these things. And it's fairly, I don't know if contemporary is the right word anymore, but it's like, it's not ABC 1-2-3. It's more like, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's kind of very developed kind of stuff. But that was kind of my entry point. And then I had to work my way back through that. But anyway, so I just remember, you know, talking to Randy and you know, he was, I think you were talking about, I don't know how the conversation started, but just the fact that he had met, you know, Elvin Jones and Tony Williams, who were the drummers that were on those two records, came out to me in that moment. And, you know, I was kind of blown away by that. And I was still very much like the first couple bands I played with was like a hippie jam rock band and like a classic rock cover band, which is about as far away from bebop as you can get. But I was trying to start to learn to play some jazz. And I don't know if you remember this, Randy, but actually, it was in the summertime. I think it was the summer of 1995. Don't ask me how I can remember that. But I actually asked you if I could take a lesson with you. And I was woefully unprepared to be studying with you at that point, But I think I woke up about 45 minutes after the lesson was supposed to start. and you told me to meet you at the music building at like 10 in the morning or something like that. And I pulled in there. I drove about 80 miles an hour through East Lansing to get over there. Man. And I pulled up about 10 to 11 and you were like on your way out and you were like, we'll do it again some other time. And then that other time didn't happen for like another 10 years or more after that, I think. I had not really dug super deep into jazz drumming at that point, and it wasn't until I don't know how verbose I should be about this, but I was at the end of the 90s. I lived in Detroit for a couple years. Okay. And I kind of had that I had that devil and angel for many years of like, I just really want to go play music for a living, but I have to have a job and have benefits and, you know, and be a responsible adult,
right.
You know, kind of thing. And so in 1999, I pawned my cell phone to buy drum lessons with this drummer in Detroit. I was working selling mortgages and I hated it. It was miserable. Wow. And I got drum lessons with this drummer named David Taylor in Detroit, and he started helping me get my jazz stuff together. And then my Detroit area, I say Detroit, I lived in Royal Oak, but that situation kind of fizzled. I ended up back home in Lansing, and I walked into the music building. I started going back to school. I was about 26, and I had a bunch of bad grades from some failed attempts at college. So I was taking classes at LCC to kind of fill the hole back in that I had dug for myself. And at one point, I'm getting way deep into my history here. I don't know if I'm going too long or not, but I had started going out to this place called Villegas Restaurant, which no longer exists. It was in Okemos, kind of by Dobie Road and Grand River. And some guys had started doing a Thursday night session there back in the late 90s. And at the time I started going out, the gig was kind of being run by Jim Alfredson.
Oh, wow.
And Joe Gloss, Joe Gloss, great guitarist. And this was even before they'd started Organissimo.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you're going back in some history.
Yeah,
now.
Man. Yeah. It's so this was February of 2000. I started going out there and it was like the only place. It kind of in a way, kind of like what Moriarty's is now, where there wasn't really any other place, at least that I could find.
Okay.
Where I could hear people playing and get a chance to sit in. So I'd go out every Thursday night and I'd play my two songs and I'd just kind of absorb everything else that was going on. And so I was out there pretty much every week for like the next several months. And it happened that in August of that year, the two drummers that were kind of playing that gig, they were kind of going on and off weeks, splitting weeks, whatever. They both moved out of town in August. One of them went to Boston to go to Berkeley.
Wow. So they had a need.
Yeah. Yep. And Matt, that's when Matt Guggenmas moved out to California. And I was the only other drummer that was showing up with any regularity. So Jim and Joe were like, do you want to take this gig over? And I was like super green still. So I really owe them a lot for, you know, asking me to do it and putting some faith in me to learn how, you know, to learn how to play. And that's when Jim and I first really connected. And it's a brotherhood ship. Is that a relationship that's lasted, 25 years now.
Which is really, that's really cool. I wanted to ask, I'm gonna bring Uncle G in here for a minute. Randy, I talked to you earlier today before we started recording, because as you know, this program is presented by the Capital Area Blues Society. Mm-hmm. Y'all are jazz more than anything. But talk about the difference between jazz drumming and blues drumming. How do we tie that to the blues?
Well, it's all related.
Okay.
It's all related.
And I didn't know this, so this is a history lesson for me, too.
I say that if they tell you the truth about it, the first thing a jazz musician usually learns how to play is the blues.
Okay.
And so when somebody would say to me, oh, you Randy Gillespie, oh, you play jazz, huh? And I say, yeah, some. And they say, you play blues, too? Then that's when I have to tell them Then I tell them, you know who B.B. King is? Yeah. You heard him sing? Yeah, well, it's a 1-4-5. It's the blues, 12-bar blues. I say when John Coltrane or Charlie Parker play the blues, it's the same thing. It's a 12-bar blues. Mm. I say the melody is different, and the key is probably different, but it's still, musically, it's the same thing, 1-4-5. So it's all related. Really, they say. I said, you know what you like, but it's still the blues, 12-bar blues. That's the first thing they learn how to play, and then they go from there. So it's all related. And I explained that to them, and they still have a little question mark, but I say, it's the blues. And that's what they learn how to play first. And they go from there. And then they start playing tunes with different changes, different songs. You know?
Sure.
But it's all related. See, so they, and they use different kind of words like contemporary. I still don't know what the heck that means. they put that, and that's okay. I ain't mad at them. It's okay. But it's all related, you know.
Sure.
Now, here's something. There's a tune that is called Solid Jack. And this organ player,
Jack McDuff?
No, with Peter Bernstein.
Oh, Larry Golding's?
Larry Golden. He had this tune on his one of his CDs called Solid Jack. And when they first played the tune, the first change is a 12 bars blues. But the solo forms, right after that, they played that one. The solo forms starts on the 4 chord. Mm. And I told Peter Bernstein when he was here before this, not this last time, when he was here before, I asked him who brought that tune to the recording studio. He said Larry Golden brought it. I said, well, when you get back to New York, you tell Larry Golden he didn't come up with that one on his own. He'd been hanging around some sanctified church people. Because it's like 2 8-bar sections.
Okay.
It sounds and feels the same way, but you know it's, if you're listening, you know it's something a little different about it, you know? So I say, and he laughed about it, because we had some of them kind of tunes in the church I come up in, and I recognize that, so, but it's all good. I said, but it's all related. All related.
Yeah, now, sorry.
Go ahead.
In jazz academia, you'll often people talk about that the two elements that make jazz are a swing vibe, you mm-hmm. know, swung eighth note,
yep.
and a blues feeling. And even, you know, Miles Davis in his book talks about how he hated the word jazz, and he wished that jazz would have been named rhythm and blues, because those are the two things that made the music in his mind.
So, makes sense, yeah. Definitely. Now, Randy, I gotta have you share this story. About a year ago, I alluded to the Liars Club, the Storytellers Club that we did with Bill Malone and Mike Scoring, a bunch of people. You were there.
Yeah,
and
I remember.
You share a name, your last name, with a very, very high-level trumpet player. And this guy's got a story. You got to hear this story. So the floor is yours, sir.
Oh, well, back in 1964,
right?
Yep. Yeah. And it was in May, and it was a place called the Wonder Gardens in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Okay.
We were the house band, and we was there for 2 summers, starting in May and going through Labor Day weekend. We played opposite every big name that was coming into the club for those 2 summers. Well, this particular time, it was the beginning of the season for us, and we was playing opposite Dizzy Gillespie. And so the first break, the first intermission, then it was quiet, the phone rang. And they heard Gillespie, that's all the bartender heard, Gillespie. So they gave the phone to Diz. And I'm standing fairly close to Diz, and I heard Diz say, wait a minute, baby.
wait a minute, baby, this is this. What was happening, my wife was on the telephone bawling out this because I didn't call home when I first got there. So she thought she was talking to me. So when they gave me the phone, I said hello, and my wife says, Randy? I said, yeah, this is me. And she say, was that Dizzy Gillespie? I said, mm-hmm. And she said, oh, my God. So I said, don't feel bad, baby. Just think, you one of the few people can actually say you balled out Dizzy Gillespie. And for the next years, I mean, every time Diz would see me, if it was on the streets in New York, no matter where he saw me at, for the next 25 years, first thing out of his mouth, boy, did you call your wife? First thing out of his mouth. I played this Yardbird Suite that Barry Harris wrote, and Diz was a guest artist in Detroit Jazz Festival. And when Diz walked, this is 20-some years later, Diz walked into the rehearsal, and he saw me, first thing out of his mouth, hey, boy, did you call your wife? Didn't nobody know what the heck he was talking about. What's he talking about? And I say, Diz, can't you let it go? No. He said, well, that woman is going to come through that telephone. I ain't letting it go. So this sees me, but nobody really saw me, but he talked about that, man. I was in Pittsburgh playing a gig. At a place called Nightcap East. Diz was in town by himself playing with the Pittsburgh Wind Symphony.
Okay.
And he came down to the club where I was with the group I was with and playing there. He come down to the club and sat in and stayed all night. Just sitting in. Yeah, Diz
wow.
did, yeah. And so, and he did the same thing. And then he says, he walked in and looked up and hey, boy, did you call your wife? That was back then. Oh, man, same thing. Every time he see me. Anyway, that was my experience with Diz. But
what a cool tie. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
A story that lasts for all those years.
I told Diz. Yeah, right. I told Diz he was a flustered drummer.
How about you, Jeff? Any brushes with greatness? Anything that maybe didn't go all that great?
Oh, boy.
Or something that went great. It doesn't matter.
I don't have any stories like that to share, I'm afraid.
All right. Well, let's turn the page a little bit, and I want to talk about that fun Tuesday evening you guys have up at Moriarty's. Mm. This has been going on for quite a while. How many years now?
So the first one was July 23rd of 2014. So we're going to be celebrating 11 years of Jazz Tuesdays.
They got a T-shirt and everything. And who was it that designed the shirt?
So the logo was originally designed by Jessica Cowles, who passed away a couple years ago.
Yep.
Every couple years I get another batch printed up. So I'm still trying to get rid of the last one. So hit me up and buy one because I got a box full in my garage.
Oh, man. So you guys get together. What some of the greatest musicians in the greater Lansing area come out? I mean, Jim Alfredson, who you referred to earlier. You've had some bigger names come in, too, haven't you?
Yeah. So when I first started it, I had just finished my master's degree in jazz studies at Michigan State. It was 2014. And I just didn't have a lot of stuff on my calendar. I had to take a job at a music store once again to make ends meet. And so basically my idea was I'm going to hire people that I want them to call me for gigs. And, you know, it's a Tuesday night. Most jazz musicians are not playing gigs on Tuesdays. I mean, there are some out there, but there's just not a lot. So, you know, I was able to get like, you know, the very first one I did was Paul Keller, who's, you know, I mean, he's toured the world. And lives in Ann Arbor, and he came up and played the first one. And you know, over time, it's just become a thing. And I mean, you know, people know about it. I have a guy from the Seattle, Washington area, Dimitri Matheny. He comes in not quite every year, but every year or two, he'll come through. I've had different touring artists from New York City, like Brian Charette. the Anderson Twins, Ben Rosenblum, and you know, whereas before I was having to, you know, kind of like put some thought a little bit and make a lot of phone calls and struggle to fill the calendar a little bit, you know, here it's June 27th right now and I'm starting to book 2026 at this point. So
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So it's, you know, but I try to be very inclusive with it too.
Sure.
You know, cause there, we have such an amazing, body of students at Michigan State. And so I try to get the student bands in there, you know, make room for them as mm-hmm. well. But you know, there's just, we have so many talented musicians in Ann Arbor, Detroit, Grand Rapids. So it keeps the calendar pretty full.
You know, I'm going to put a little bug in your ear. I would love, because I know Freddie comes up there occasionally. Mm-hmm. I would love to see you get his brother into town.
Oh.
Could you imagine Tim Cunningham and Freddie? He was just down in St. Louis jamming with his brother.
That's right.
Just think about that.
Tim lives in Chicago?
I'm not sure where he's at.
Okay.
I'll bet if you reached out to Marge, she might give you his phone number.
Tim Cunningham. I think he's still in St. Louis.
Oh, in St. Louis.
I know that's where Freddie was a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Went down there to gig with him for something.
Okay. I think he's still in St. Louis.
Yeah, it'd be fun to make that happen one of these days.
If you ever do, I'm your first phone call.
All right.
And I'll be there with my camera, because normally we have to get up at like 3:50 in the morning. So getting out on a Tuesday or Wednesday is really difficult for us.
I can imagine.
Just because I if I'm not in bed by 8 o'clock, I turn into a pumpkin, you know. But come on, man,
you're supposed to be a jazz musician.
Yeah.
you can't be doing that. You're gonna give us a bad name. Right?
So anyway, if it ever comes together, give me a call.
That'd be fun.
I would come out, take pictures, video. I'd do all kinds of stuff.
I have to talk to Fred and Marge about that. Fred's actually going to be our featured guest on July 15th. I don't know when this is going to come out, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when I'm going to put it out yet. I haven't decided.
Okay.
Just because I've got all of season five. I've got almost the entire season five done.
Wow.
So this could potentially go out as an exclusive content episode, which gotcha. I think it'd be fun.
Okay.
For the locals, you know, to check it out.
Cool.
But I wanted to ask you guys, during the COVID shutdown, did you do anything online? Did you, you know, do some stuff on the internet like so many of the others did?
Well, yeah, most of my lessons, matter of fact, all my lessons at that point was on Zoom.
You're still doing lessons?
Yeah.
Are you really?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's cool. There's a man that loves what he does right there.
Yeah. And most of them during the pandemic was on Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we do this show, is on Zoom.
Okay.
Did you do any Tuesday night jams like that with Zoom or?
Yeah. So
I don't know, Jeff.
Yeah. The first few months, you know, like it was dicey because basically the regulations and laws were that you were pretty much just supposed to stay in your house.
Yeah.
But at some point when we were able to expand our bubbles out a little bit, we started doing we called it Live from Jimmy's Basement. And so we continued doing the Tuesday night broadcasts.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And so the first few months were from Jim Alfredson's basement because he has quite the basement studio.
I've seen all the gear.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we did them from there for a while. And then it got to be a little onerous for his family.
I'm sure.
So Corey DeRussia, who owns Troubadour Recording Studios near downtown Lansing, he very kindly let us set up in his space.
Wow.
And so we did it for, I want to say it was another year maybe. We were running down there on Tuesday nights to do the live broadcast from there.
And you do this every week, don't you?
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, every Tuesday night.
Wow.
So it was nice to be able to do it online like that. And we still continued. Uh-oh.
Hold on.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you the question again.
Okay.
That's a thunderstorm watch.
Oh.
That's what that is. And I'm a spotter for the National Weather Service. So, but I'm going to cut this out. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
So you do this every Tuesday night.
Yeah, yep, every Tuesday for 11 years. I mean, minus some weeks there in during the pandemic, but yeah, I mean, we managed to keep it going, and you know, I was still getting, you know, because people still wanted to work, they wanted to play. We didn't make, you know, we got some tip money that came in online, but you know, it was not a bunch. But I would still get, you know, people from Detroit and Ann Arbor and Grand Rapids that would come up and we'd do an hour show on YouTube.
Wow.
And but that kind of kept the name happening. And, you know, when the things started to open back up and, you know, we went right back into doing live shows, and it was dicey for half a year or so. But, you know,
I remember
within a short time, it, yep, you know, things were right back, and we're almost back to where, I mean, we have full house every week. It's hard, yeah, to get a seat unless you show up super early, but, yep, but we're pretty much back to where it was, I would say.
I remember, you know, when Greg Nagy was doing his stuff live, and Billy Dean and Garth Brooks and all these musicians were doing their stuff online just to kind of try to bring some normalcy back to our lives, you know, because that was a really, to me, that was a really lonely time. You know,
got that right.
But now, are these videos out there, like live from Jimmy's basement? These are all out on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, I think they're all on, because memories fade. But we were broadcasting it both on Facebook and on YouTube.
Okay.
And I think most of them were like went out on the Jazz Tuesdays YouTube feed.
Okay.
But if not, they're all on Jim's YouTube feed, but they're all out there in one place or another.
Well, we'll make sure to get the links for both and put those up on the information section of this page.
Yeah. And I do, since I started Jazz Tuesdays in July 2014, but starting in February of 2015, I started making videos of the shows every night, at least the first set that featured the guest artist. So I have my own video feed since, you know, it's over 10 years now. And there's, wow, a few that didn't work out for one reason or another. But I have almost every show on that YouTube feed.
Love those little time capsules, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are cool. Now, I got to bring Uncle G back in here, man.
Sure.
You didn't just play locally, did you?
You talking about when?
You toured with some pretty big names, didn't you?
Yeah, I was on the road.
Including a couple of blues guys.
Yeah, yeah. John Lee Hooker.
Yeah, there's a poster hanging right behind you from John Lee when he was in Germany.
Yeah, this was in Cleveland.
Okay.
And a place called Gleason's. It, you know, he would play a 12-bar blues, and next thing you know, he'd put a bridge to it out of nowhere. Put a bridge to it, so you got it. It wasn't bad for me because I'm playing the rhythm, but the piano player and bass player, man, they had where did that come from? But it was okay.
Yeah,
you know, once you get in. And so, Spoon, called Jimmy Witherspoon, mm-hmm, played with him in Detroit. You know, he come through and I played with him in Detroit at the festival, and I had played with him. I played with him in Cleveland too at that same club, Gleason's.
Okay.
His own woodwork, and they booked a lot of singers. Gleason's did, you know. What's that once singing group that had the Flamingos, the Stars, that had that big hit.
Okay.
They booked them. Oh, man. Oh, my goodness. A lot of big name singers come to Gleason's on Woodward. And I got a chance to play with a lot of them coming through, you know, at that club. And
Screaming so, Jay Hawkins was another one you had listed.
Oh, well, I traveled with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Screaming Jay Hawkins. He put a spell on you. And sometimes he dress up like Dracula, you know, with the
tuxedo with the white, with the pearl.
Yeah.
And the stuff on his face. Oh, my. He's a nice guy, though. But he's a chip, boy. Screaming Jay Hawkins. Boy, he's a funny guy.
You played with Ray Charles once upon a time, too, right?
Did you?
No, I only did that once when I was 16.
Come on. I only did that once, he says.
Oh. No, I just so happened. I happened to be backstage when the drummer got sick. Something going in there. They said, get that kid.
Wow.
You know, I'm standing back there, you know, like, get that kid. So they got me, and I didn't have sense enough to be scared. You know, I was too young. I'm at home. And Edgar Willis, the bass player, said, now, you be all right, young blood. You be all right. Just watch Ray. Just watch Ray. Okay. And playing, and like, he's playing, and I heard him say something about, that's nice, son. That's nice, son. And I realized he was talking about the rhythm, you know. And see, Ray, you have to anticipate without fully committing in the time. Okay? You anticipate. So when you're watching him, and when he dropped the head, that's when you hit. You hit with him with that head.
Okay.
You be cool, man. You know, but like I say, I didn't get scared until years later with his reputation with drummers and sometimes guitar players. I was at a rehearsal one time. This is when I was on the road and the band was rehearsing. I went over there and I heard him say the guitar player, guitar player, would you turn it down some? I don't want to hear it. I just want to feel it. I heard Ray say that on. That's it. Oh man,
that and sounds then, like something Ray would say. Yeah.
And I was watching TV, and Ray was on this TV station, and it was some other singers along with him, but he was on. It's been last, and it was his band plus some more people. They added some people in the orchestra.
Oh, wow.
Besides his band. Okay. And he sang the one song. I'm watching it. He sang the second song, and the band, this national TV, mind you, the band got out in front of him just a hair. Oh. And he said on national TV, wow, y'all got to wait on me now. Wait on me, national TV. I said, oh, shoot, boy. I said, damn.
Wow.
Daddy, national TV. Oh, y'all got to wait on me now. Wait on me. Hey, boy. I said, wow, man. You can see the body movement. That like, looked like the band just, boy. I said, oh, shit, boy.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and Ray was, you know, he was, now, one of my former students, He worked, did a lot of playing with Ray's band and the recordings, and Harvey Mason. And Harvey told me that when he, you know, was going to be with Ray, sometimes he wouldn't tell him that he was there, and he started playing, and Ray would say, "Harvey, is that you?" He recognized, you know.
Yep. Recognizes.
So Randy's being modest here. That former student he was referring to is Harvey Mason, who is a very famous drummer and. In very many respects.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's Harvey like a son. You know, man,
sure.
He calls me all the time, man. You know, I'm going here, I'm going there. How you doing? Blah blah blah. You know, and but his mannerisms kind of remind me of Jeff. You know, because Harvey, with all of his success. He's did so much playing with recording with Herbie Hancock, with Grover Washington, toured with James Taylor, and toured with
highest level.
Oh yeah,
did all that, and played with Gary Mulligan, you know, and played with Earl Gardner, and all that stuff.
Wow.
And then went over two or three times and played with the London Symphony.
Mm.
He did all that,
man.
But his mannerism has never changed. He's still the same kid I met when he was in 11th grade in Atlantic City. Nothing ever changed. With all that success, you know. It, matter of fact, one time John Weber at the school needed one of the drum set player for the music ed classical stuff that they mm-hmm. do every year, and he said, "I need a drum set player." I said, "Why don't you get Harvey Mason?" He come in. "Oh, well, we can't afford Harvey Mason." I said, "Now wait a minute." So I get on the phone and call Harvey. I say, "Harvey, man, the music ed people, classical people, need a drum set player, and I suggested you, but they don't know if they can afford you." He say, "I'll come. Just send me a ticket, whatever they pay, and I'll take it." Just wow. like, and did come and came, you know. I say, so his mannerism has never changed. Jeff reminds me of him because Jeff is the same every day, you know, and no matter what's going on, man, you know, he's the same every day, man, you know, this wonderful soul. So Jeff reminds me of Harvey, his mannerism stuff, because he just, you know, Harvey, same thing, man. And, you know, all that success, man, he's never changed, man. Just the same kid, man, you know. So Jeff reminds me of his, you know, that mannerism that yeah. Jeff has, you know.
I'm blushing over here.
So for those within traveling distance from the greater Lansing, Michigan area who would appreciate either attending or taking part in Jazz Tuesdays, let's give them some details.
Okay. It's Jazz Tuesdays at Moriarty's Pub, which is at 802 East Michigan Avenue.
Look at this guy.
Well, I have to type it so many times. It's like burned in my brain. But it's right on Michigan Avenue within sight of the Capitol in downtown Lansing. We play from 7 to 10 every Tuesday. It's a different band every week. I'm playing most of the time, but... you know, like Randy, we feature Randy once or twice a year. And like I said earlier, we get some of the student groups that come in sometimes, or, you know, different bands.
But I mean, so what happens if you're both there on that Tuesday night? You flip a coin to see who's going to play, or do you arm wrestle?
I often play the first three or four songs, and then I invite him up to finish the set out. But yeah,
because I know he's very highly respected in the greater Lansing area. I mean, everybody knows Uncle G. Yep. That's all there is to it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So the format is I have a featured guest or guests every week, and we start at around 7, and we usually play about 75 minutes with like the, you know, the house band of the mm-hmm. week. And then after a break, we open it up to a jam session for the rest of the night.
Nice.
It's a jazz session. It's not an open mic. and we'll have, you know, MSU students, will have just community members that play, and, you know, sometimes we get absolute pros like this guy over here that'll come in and bring the house down during the jam session.
Now, did Chris Manami, did he come into a jam session? Is that how you met him?
So Chris is at...
Talk about this kid for a minute.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. So Chris, I think he grew up in Florida. If I remember, if I have my facts straight, he grew up in Florida and did a bachelor's degree at one of the universities down there. And then he came in to Michigan State to do his master's degree with Randy Napoleon, who teaches guitar there. And, you know, I, having done a session like this for 10 years now, like, I've kind of learned the signs of the kids that are real serious, because they're like showing up like every week, and they just want to play, you know. It's like a session. They want to come out and get a couple songs in. And Chris was that guy. He just started showing up all the time. Wow. And next thing I knew, I'm like, I need a guitarist. I'm going to call Chris, you know? And, so he's phenomenal. And you know, he's been on the band there with me, you know, more times than I can remember right now.
Well, and he joined you because you play at there's another venue in East Lansing that you play at occasionally too.
Yes, Red Cedar Spirits.
Yep.
So that video you captured one night with Jim Alfredson was with Chris as
yep.
well.
Yep.
And sadly for us, he and his fiance are moving to New York
in
the next month or so. So our loss is New York's gain, but I'm sure he'll still be popping up every now and then.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Now, Jeff, how can people reach out to you if they want to come in and take part? If they want more information, where can they go? Let's get your socials out there and,
for sure,
and information.
So Facebook.com/JazzTuesdays at Moriarty's. It's a little bit onerous to have to type all that in, but
we'll put the link in there for you. Don't worry.
Yeah, but if you just search for Jazz Tuesdays on Facebook, you should be able to find it fairly easily. So I have the regular artist page where I upload the events and stuff like that. There's also a Jazz Tuesdays community page, I call it, in which I share, you know, the videos that I make, and I share the events and stuff on there too. If you go to youtube.com/JazzTuesdays, you'll find the YouTube feed, which I think there's almost 500 videos on there now. Going back.
That is so cool.
And I need subscribers. It's been 10 years and I've only got about 780 subscribers. So help push me over that 1,000 mark, folks. I have a text club too. That's probably the easiest way for people to know who's playing their when. If you want me to share that info,
yeah, by all means, man. We'll put all that information in the information section for this video. We'll make sure to put it in for you.
Right on. Yeah,
absolutely. Jeff Shelp, Uncle G, I appreciate having you guys here. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
us. And man, it's everything that I expected it to be. I appreciate the stories and glad you came.
Well, I played with Chris Melami. I had my own band doing the East Lansing Jazz Festival on a Friday, but that Saturday afternoon, I played with Chris Melami and his girlfriend at the festival.
Okay.
With Ruben Stump and Tommy Nobles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a good time. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I don't know if you actually clock this going into this, but you know, Randy at age 90 is still teaching and part of the faculty at Michigan State University Jazz Studies. He's been,
man.
Yeah, he's been there
90.
Yes. And he's been there since when it was about 2006, 2003 or so, when you came back after Gerald Cleaver left.
Who left?
When Gerald Cleaver was there when I first started.
Yeah, right. Gerald Cleaver
left
in the middle of the semester, so he moved to New York, and I came back and started teaching again. Rodney asked me, man, would you come back? And then the lady that was Arson Letters, what's her name, Jeff?
Oh, Wendy.
Wendy, yeah. Wendy said, look at me in my mouth to see what I'm going to say. Like she gave me that look. Almost like, you better say yeah. Yeah, so, man, but you know, I still love to play as much as I ever did.
Well, as long as you got your health, why not? It's something you enjoy, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I still like to play fast.
And you still swing your butt off. My goodness.
I paid Jeff to say that. You know that.
Well, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. I look forward to coming out and catching you guys when I don't have to get up at the crack of dawn.
Listen, man, you're going to have to do something about that if you're going to be jazz.
Yeah, it's usually about the time I'm going to bed, you know.
Yeah. You don't know how many musicians I know that say, don't call me before 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's like,
no, man.
Larry McRae. Don't call Larry before 2 in the afternoon. He's not going to answer the phone.
Oh, no.
You know, but that's the lifestyle. So.
No, you know, I get up early, man. Even though I stay up late, I still get up early. You know, I just can't lay in the bed, man. Daytime come, I get up early and stuff.
Make it count, brother.
Yeah.
Make it count. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my appreciation to Randy Gillespie and Jeff Shelp, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm trying, trying, baby, diving up and down. Get a road, yeah.
until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.